You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's show, we talk about Arkansas's baseball regional draw. They're going to play North Dakota State on Friday at Baum Walker Stadium. Kansas and Creighton also coming to town. Also, Ethan Westerman in studio will discuss what happened with Razorback softball and their super regional loss to Ole Miss over the weekend. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Baseball team going to play North Dakota State on Friday at Baum Walker Stadium. That's how the NCAA postseason will begin for the Razorbacks. North Dakota State 20-32 overall. They have got the worst record of any team that's in the NCAA tournament, but they won their conference tournament. And you know how this goes. You win your conference tournament, doesn't matter what you do during the regular season, and you get into the NCAA postseason, right or wrong. That's how it works. And the Bison are coming to Fayetteville. Kansas is going to be here as well. Really good team out of the Big 12, an upstart program. And Creighton, in their last year, under longtime head coach Ed Service, will be coming here as the number three seed. We'll break it all down today. Ethan Westerman is in studio with me. You know, I did not know what to expect during the selection show yesterday in terms of national seeds. I'm not surprised. Arkansas was a top four national seed, top three, really. They're the number three seed. I don't know that you could have said boo about any of the top six. Like LSU is the number six national seed. And if you ask me, they could be the number one overall national seed. Their RPI is not as good as some of the other teams. I don't know that their strength of schedule is quite as good. But this is just the weirdest year going into this tournament because I don't know what to expect. There's not a dominant team in college baseball this year. I think that you know, some people might say that's a reflection of the teams aren't as strong. I don't think that's it. I think there's just more parity in the sport this year. But what I think it's setting us up for, Ethan, is a regional weekend that could get really wacky because I think you look at any number of these regional hosts and, you know, I mean, show me the consistency from any of them this year. And so it's a weird weekend, I feel like, that's coming up in college baseball.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a byproduct of just like this is how long it's taken for kind of all this transfer craziness to really make it to where it's somewhat more of just a open field each year. Because I know for a fact, like, I just got done covering softball. I know we'll talk about that later, but also that tournament felt the same way as far as like it was like, well, who cares who the top, like, it was like you knew who the top six or seven were. It was just what number are they going to be? And you felt like you could make a case for a whole handful of them for the number one overall. So I just think that it's kind of like where we're at with college sports where it's like, I don't know, like over time things add up where you start building your roster in a way that it does make it to where there's not going to have maybe that one dominant team in a baseball or softball world. I think that I don't know what it is about these sports, but I just think with NIL, it's like it's not how it could be like with football or basketball, where I think you see like just these bought teams that are going to dominate. I just think, and there's more parity in those sports right now, I think, than ever too. But I just think, especially in baseball, softball, it's kind of like just made it a lot more wide open.
What's happening is that the mid-majors have no chance unless they win their tournament of getting into the NCAA, with some exceptions, like a Fairfield, for instance, or not a Fairfield, that was a couple of years ago, Northeastern this year. They're 48-9. Now, they won their conference tournament. Had they not won their conference tournament, I believe they would have gotten into the NCAA tournament because they were 48-9. Mm-hmm. They got more wins than anybody else in the country. But you don't want to leave that to chance.
UC Irvine too, right? Did I hear
UC Irvine's in? Yeah, they're a two seed in the tournament. You know, like what I see though, I mean, the numbers from these power conferences that are getting into the NCAA tournament are staggering. SEC got 13 teams. I don't think that surprised anybody. There was some thought they could get 14 before A&M wet the bet against Missouri. You got ACC with 9 teams. The Big 12 got 8 teams. Let's add that up real quick. That's 30 of the 64 teams that come from those three conferences. Okay? Then you got 27 other automatic qualifiers outside of those three conferences. That means there's only seven at-large teams that came from any conference outside of the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12.
Mm-hmm. And that's just where we're at. I think that that's it is going to be a lot harder to see these mid-majors just put together a season that's going to stack up against, you know, a bottom fourth SEC team that has an RPI and a strength of schedule that's way up there, or you know, a Big 12 team that maybe finished below average in its conference, but also, you know, has the metrics that suggest it should be over a mid-major. I just think, yeah, it's gotten to a point where we're finally, like, it's truly wide open. Like, it was kind of one of those things where you mentioned it to me a few weeks ago that, oh, there's talk Vanderbilt might be the number one overall seed. And I was just thinking, like, I mean, I haven't followed it as close as you, of course, this year, but I was like, oh, Arkansas swept them. I don't think I've seen them toward the top. Like, Texas was at the top of the SEC standings all year. It's just like we're at a point where a team that didn't win the SEC can be the number one overall seed.
They were the number four team in the SEC.
Yeah, and that's just crazy. It's actually exactly what happened with softball, too, I think, with A&M was, like, they finished second in the league.
Top four teams in the – or the top four national seeds were all SEC teams. Auburn's another one that I think people were kind of surprised by. But if you look at what they did throughout the season, it's like you got to keep an eye on these guys. And they love the SEC. Yeah. And rightfully so. The SEC is dragging this sport along with them. And it's either the other conferences are going to have – the ACC's done a good job of staying competitive. But the rest of the sport – is going to have to figure out, are we going to keep up with them, or are we going to break away and there's going to be like maybe an NCAA tournament of 100 teams, or maybe a pool of 100 teams that can get into a tournament that goes to Omaha and everybody else goes and does their own thing. What the selection committee showed with 13 teams from the SEC, 8 regional hosts from the SEC, 6 top 8 national seeds, and really 6 of the top 7 from the SEC – is that you guys, everybody else, you need to be doing what they're doing, or, you know, you're going to get left in the dust. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a day where there's 16 SEC teams in the NCAA tournament. Wouldn't be surprised by that at all.
I think what's crazy now, I mean, of course, there's the partnership with SEC and ESPN that helps with, like, even the conference tournament, like, it's always a pretty good production, I think, both baseball and softball. And it's one of those deals where I just think that the way that the SEC cares about the sport, I don't know. It's like I don't even see other teams, like major conference teams, play games a lot of times the rest of the year. It's like hard to watch even some of their games. It's just like whenever you get more eyeballs on SEC teams, which, I don't even think that, like, I say it's easier to watch SEC games. I still don't think that they, like, televise it how it should.
No.
But it's still easier to see these SEC teams play than anybody else. And I just think that, in general, it's kind of like that partnership with SEC, ESPN, it goes a long way.
They're trying to make things equitable between baseball and softball. And so it limits the number of baseball games that get onto linear networks. Like SEC Network or like ESPN2, ESPNU. I think, and we've talked about this before, I think that there's a market out there for people who would watch this, and it would grow the sport if they'd put it on TV more. But that's a conversation, I think, maybe for another day. Looking at North Dakota State, mentioned that they're 12 games below 500. There's only two teams that are in the NCAA tournament this year that have losing records. North Dakota State's one of them, and Little Rock is the other one. A lot of people thought Little Rock might end up here in Fayetteville. Little Rock instead going to go to Baton Rouge and play in the regional at LSU. That didn't surprise me. I think a lot of people assumed when Little Rock won the Ohio Valley that they were going to come here because they're 200 miles down the road. And even a few weeks ago when they came up here for the midweek series, Chris Curry and I were talking the day before the series started. He said, you know, conventional wisdom says that we would go to Fayetteville if we made the NCAA tournament. That's why I like to take these trips to Fayetteville, to Ole Miss, because he wants to get his team acclimated to those types of environments. Even if it's on a Tuesday and a Wednesday night, it's not going to be what it's like in a regional, but at least it gets them the experience of playing in those types of ballparks. But the thing is, there's a lot of teams that are within busing distance hosting of Little Rock. LSU is one of them. They could have been sent to Hattiesburg. They could have been sent to Oxford. They could have been sent to Nashville. Had TCU hosted, they could have been sent to Fort Worth. All of them are within that 400-mile radius that the NCAA uses to justify putting teams on a bus. And so I'm not surprised that Little Rock got sent somewhere else. I thought that if, I thought that, here's what I thought would happen with the four seats. I thought it would either be Little Rock, North Dakota State, and I'll tell you why in a second, or one of the many, many teams out in the Northeast this year. I mean, there were seven teams from Northeastern states that made the NCAA field this year. And so what happens is that if they can bus you somewhere they want to, but if you don't have a regional site anywhere nearby, like the teams from Massachusetts or Connecticut or those states that have got teams in the tournament, or North Dakota State, who's coming here, they're going to try to fly you to one of the more nearby locations. And so that's why I thought North Dakota State was a possibility. I wrote about that on Saturday night. And so here they are. They're 12 games below 500. Their record, their metrics, none of this looks really good. But you can't overlook teams in the NCAA tournament. We know that very well. And this is what Dave Van Horn had to say yesterday when he met with reporters on Zoom shortly after the selection show about playing North Dakota State.
Yeah, you know, they've been sneaky good over the last few years, to be honest with you. They've taken some trips early out west and beat some good people. And you're kind of going, wow, you know, because they're playing inside. They're practicing inside and doing a lot most of the year. They have an older team. I was informed that they have, and I noticed they had them. I didn't know they had that many. They have like 10 seniors on their team. A lot of times that's what it takes when you're a mid-major to be really successful at all levels, is to have those older kids. You know, they won the tournament up there, beat Oral Roberts, and obviously Oral Roberts has had a pretty good run over the years of going to regionals. So I'm sure they're going to be a solid team.
ORU in the Summit League, I don't know what the exact number is, but they've won something like 20 of the last 25 conference tournaments. I mean, they are the team to beat. It's not a big conference. They routinely struggle to keep enough teams in that conference, like they can keep the minimum number of teams that you have to stay eligible to be a conference. I think it's six teams that you've got to have. And because there's so much turnover, this year St. Thomas and ORU were their two best teams. Well, St. Thomas is ineligible for the NCAA postseason for 4 years because they've moved up from Division II, so they don't even get to go to the conference tournament. And this is a six-team conference where they only had four teams go to Omaha. They played at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, their conference tournament. Only four teams went to Omaha for that tournament. So look, North Dakota State, I'm sure they're a good team. They're going to come in here. They're going to give Arkansas their best. But they come from what I think is an exceptionally weak conference. And then obviously, you know, their record is not one that you respect them, but I don't know that you know, there's not a whole lot of, I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's interesting whenever you look at, because you had the breakdown on our website about the games against Quad 1 teams, and they were 2-13.
They
played a lot more Quad 1 teams.
They played five games against SEC teams.
Yeah. And if you look at the other teams in the pod, in the regional, they played more Quad 1 games than them, which is, I think, for a team like that, it's, you know, it's kind of surprising, I think, but it's also at the same time, it's like, I think that a lot of those schools, that they rely on those type of games.
And not only that, but think about where they're located. They probably don't get to play at home until early to mid-April. They got to go south to find games early in the season.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank them off the bat. That it frustrates me to no end that Lipscomb is the Bisons. Thank goodness North Dakota State is just the Bison. Like, you don't have to add the S to make it plural, but that's another. That's my frustration with Lipscomb. So
the expectation is that North Dakota State's going to throw Nolan Johnson on Friday, redshirt junior left-hander. He was a Summit League Pitcher of the Year, 4.14 ERA, a 1.19 WHIP, 77 strikeouts, 21 walks, and 82 and two-third innings. He was really good down the stretch. You look at his numbers. I mean, he got him into the seventh inning a lot in his starts late in the year. And then I noticed at the conference tournament, he had a 119-pitch start against Omaha at the conference tournament, turned around 3 days later, made a 57-pitch start against ORU to help win the tournament championship.
Wow.
So he's a workhorse, but he might be a tired workhorse when he comes here to Fayetteville.
Yeah, it's always interesting me hearing about these smaller conference tournaments, how they navigate their pitching compared to SEC, like in their conference tournament, because it is so much more. It's like on the line for them at their conference tournament. I mean, literally everything's on the line for them at their conference tournaments. Of course, you know, SEC tournament, I mean, I think teams want to win that thing, but not at the expense anymore of, you know, burning an arm.
You can read more about North Dakota State. Got some stories up at our site. One of them, what to know about the teams at the NCAA Fayetteville Regional. You can read that at wholehogsports.com. Arkansas, you know, I've said this the last 2 years when they've hosted a regional, and I believe it this year, they should win this regional. Now, it hasn't materialized the last 2 years. TCU came in here. I underestimated 2 years ago just how hot TCU was. I mean, they rode that hot streak all the way to Omaha. They got beat by ORU on a walk-off home run or late-inning home run, and it kind of derailed them a little bit. They still were a national semifinalist, but I kind of wonder with that TCU team, what would they have done had they not fallen into the loser's bracket at the College World Series? I think that they were playing well enough that, you know, maybe they're the team that gets to the national championship series. And but that was a good team. Last year, Kansas State, boy, that was I think that was the tougher one to swallow for the Razorbacks than the TCU one, not only because K-State was not as good as that TCU team, but the fact that Arkansas then turned around and lost to SEMO the next day and didn't even make it to the regional championship round. So I think there is a hunger from this Arkansas team. I was listening to Matt Hobbs on an interview on radio last week, and he used the term a couple of times. He said, right some wrongs from the past. And, you know, he didn't specifically talk about the regionals the last 2 years, but I felt like it was clear that's what he was referring to, was losing those regionals in 23 and 24. So I think there's a hunger from this Arkansas team not to let that happen again this year. And I tell you, they're 32-4 at Baum Walker Stadium. They had a great record at home last year, but there's a difference, I think, about this team this year at home. I think the pitchers pitch better on their home mound, and certainly the offense has been a lot more explosive when they're playing in that stadium. I think they're going to win the series and move on and play the winner from the Knoxville Regional. But, you know, there's been a fly in the ointment the last couple of years, and I'm interested to see who that might be this time.
Yeah, and it's always, yeah, whenever you have recent history of your season ending on your home field, it makes it a lot tougher. I just think it, like, the players feel a sense of embarrassment when they lose on their home field, a regional that they were expected to win or whatever. And I think that just, you know, it is, how are you going to respond from that for the guys that were on the team last year of, you know, how do they make sure this year that that doesn't happen again? It's funny, though, because I do feel like looking at this regional field this year, I saw a lot of comments yesterday of people saying, like, Arkansas got the toughest regional or whatever. And I don't think so. Yeah, I was like, I just am not seeing it. Maybe, I don't know what other people are seeing, but
they're looking at the win totals.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two regionals this year where three teams have 40 plus wins. Yeah. Oxford is the other one. But, you know, I mean, I look at Creighton, they've got 41 wins. Okay, but look at their strength of schedule. It's 158th in the country. Mm-hmm. Who they played. All of their notable wins this year have been midweek games against Nebraska, North Dakota State, actually. You would put them as one of their notable wins, and then they beat K-State in a midweek game. They just haven't played a whole lot of tough teams. You know, KU, they've got a tougher strength of schedule. It's 70th, and I think that's brought up by the fact that they play in the Big 12. But, you know, their non-conference schedule, they didn't really challenge themselves a whole lot in the non-conference. So, you know, I guess where I'm going with this is KU's 43 wins I don't think is anywhere equal to Arkansas's 43 or Creighton with 41.
Yeah, I just was confused when I was seeing those comments because I just looked at other regionals and I was like, yeah, I feel like, you know, it's a lot scarier for your two seed coming in to be, you know.
I'd be worried if I was Tennessee. Everybody thinks Tennessee is going to win that regional. Wake Forest is really good. They went to Tallahassee and just wiped the floor with Florida State twice. I think the scores were like 12-0 and 17-2 or something. I mean, now they haven't shown that level of play every weekend that they've played, but I think if you can go to Tallahassee and beat what I think is a more disciplined Florida State team, I think they can go into Knoxville and beat a Tennessee team that has not played well at home this year.
Yeah, in postseason, always weird things happen, too, to where it's just, I feel like it's never chalk at all. My other thought when I saw the regional, I was like, well, this is the Wagner and Josenberger. This is the...
I hadn't even thought about that.
I'm going to say this is their little...
Because Jared Wagner came from Creighton, and Tavian Josenberger came from KU.
I was like, well, they... I guess this is the... we're paying homage to those guys with this regional. So I don't know any North Dakota State transfers that have come in.
Not in baseball.
Okay, I was about to say, I don't know.
I don't know if any of this come in any sport at
Honestly,
Arkansas. I was thinking about the kid at Alabama.
Football, take a look, though, because those guys always win in football.
Here's a basketball guy at Alabama who played at North Dakota
Grant
State.
Nelson.
Grant Nelson.
Yeah. They almost, that was almost.
That was an almost Arkansas. Yeah, didn't quite happen.
Anyway, that was just my first thought. I was like, well, these are programs that they've had some players from recently. Was there another Kansas guy, too, or am I?
You're talking about an Arkansas baseball? Yeah. I'm thinking there was, but now that you're asking me and putting me on the spot, I can't think of who it is off the top of my head.
Well, those were the two that came
I'll
to
circle
mind
back around to this.
Those were the two. They were part of that team that the last time they didn't escape their home regional was.
There's too much roster turnover. I can't keep track of the 150 people that are in football in any given year, or the 25 people that are on the basketball team, or the 50 to 60 that are on the baseball team. I mean, it's amazing.
Football, I mean, there's like 15 spring practices, and I think by practice like 10, I've finally got it. And that's like, if I say got it, I mean I've got the ones that I need to know.
But I think I was on like game 10 last year, and I'm still looking at my football roster. Who was that?
It's tough. It's tough. But, I mean, it's just where we're at with college sports. I don't know if we ever get back to, you know. Jack, I think people are going to really be thrilled about this basketball team next year with Carter Knox coming back. Just the fact that there's so much continuity on a team, I think that fans, they miss that. But, I mean, what are you going to do? You got to do what you got to do these days.
Here's your answer. There were two players on the roster last year that had been at KU previously. Stone Hewlett, left-handed pitcher. And he didn't come directly from KU, but Jack Wagner, who was a backup on last year's team, he had been at Kansas previously. He went to Tarleton State before he came to Arkansas. I think KU is the other team. To me, KU looks like the team that could give Arkansas the most trouble this week. They're offensive. Creighton, they can pitch. Like, their pitching numbers are really good. But, again, I wonder two things. Number one, how much of that is the teams they played? And number two, how much of that is the stadium where they play? They play at Chuck Schwab Field, which is the home of the World Series, and we all know that is a ginormous stadium that can be very difficult to, you know, hit home runs and play power baseball in.
I know you can't compare apples to oranges, like, but for comparison, we can try. And this is what I did with softball this year, because the team Arkansas was playing in the four seed St. Louis. They had two pitchers with like sub-3 ERAs, and I was like, let's add like 4 or 5 runs to that, because it's just not the same as going against SEC hitting if you have those numbers. And I mean, hats off to them for like being great pitching in their conference, but it's different. You have to look at stats differently based on who teams play. It's just and that goes for, you know, your hitting numbers and your pitching numbers. But I just think that, yeah, it's when you look at these teams and their strength of schedule, it doesn't do much for me. But
I think there's a lot, and this is why I think a lot of the SEC teams are going to move on into the super regional round. I think when you challenge yourself, it sets you up for this time of year. You know, it's like, hey, we've been kind of running against the wind now here for 6, 7, 8 weeks, however long, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, what is this? This is not quite the resistance that you're used to. And so I don't know how many SEC teams advance. I would not be surprised at all to see some of these teams that are going in as 2 seeds somewhere. They get through their regionals. And I would suspect most of the teams that are hosting this week will move on from the conference. And you'll probably end up with a super regional of 7 to 9 SEC teams. And probably I mean, if history holds, you're looking at probably 2 to 3 super regionals where it's SEC against SEC.
Yeah, I was watching the selection show yesterday and kind of doing that in my head of, okay, what are the all-SEC super regionals coming? I thought Arkansas, Tennessee, which I'm not going to count out Wake Forest, but like you just see these things and you start to think it. Florida in their regional against Coastal Carolina, I was like, I'm sure Coastal's just thrilled.
Yeah, I don't think Florida will win that.
Let's say, I was like, you don't think Florida will?
No, I think Florida will. When I saw that field, I was like, that looks like a win for Florida.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I was like, Florida, Auburn. It's just you start doing this, I think, where you see potential regionals pairing. I think Georgia, Ole Miss. It starts to materialize as you look at it. And also Alabama being a 2 seed in Hattiesburg.
I mean, we're talking about them maybe being a top 8 seed 2 to 3 weeks ago.
I was like, Vandy, Alabama is about to happen, the Diego Pavia Bowl in baseball. I think you're going to see a lot of it.
Well, I mean, let's look through the brackets here real quick. Vanderbilt, the number 1 seed. They got Wright State, Louisville, East Tennessee State. I think Vanderbilt should be expected to move on. Southern Miss, there were like 3 or 4 or 5 teams that were right there on the hosting bubble. And I was a little surprised Southern Miss got to host, quite honestly. Alabama and Miami and Columbia are the teams there. I think that one is just wide open. Like Florida State, their real competition in their regional, I think, comes from Northeastern. Now, Northeastern plays Mississippi State first, and maybe Mississippi State beats them. And you know, that's where Mississippi State went on their run. I think it was in 18 or 19 that they got to the World Series. They had a walk-off home run to beat Florida State, and then they just kept going.
That is a very maroon regional, by the way.
Yeah, Bethune-Cookman's in there too.
I know, it's very maroon. I'm not a fan.
Oregon State, this is an interesting because they got TCU coming up there, and I think that could be a knockdown drag out. I was a little surprised Oregon State got an 8 seed or the number 8 seed, just because they had to really, I give them a lot of credit. Mitch Canham, their coach, you know, they didn't play a conference schedule this year. Pac-12 dissolves, and they said we're going to be better off playing an independent schedule than playing in the Mountain West Conference like Washington State did, and it worked for them. They had to go on the road a lot, but it worked for them. But I think that TCU-Oregon State matchup is really fascinating. OU goes to UNC. That's an interesting one. Nebraska gets in there, too, as the Big Ten champion. You look at Oregon. This is one thing, too. My mind is still not totally familiar with all of the new conferences that these Pac-12 teams have gone from. And so I see Oregon and Arizona in the same field. It's like, well, how does that?
Yeah.
Well, because one's Big Ten and one's Big 12. You mentioned Florida going to Coastal. Auburn, they've got NC State coming in, but I think Auburn should be the favorite there. Move over here to the other side. We mentioned Arkansas, Tennessee. How about Clemson? It's got West Virginia coming in. West Virginia, they're a good team. They thought that they should maybe be hosting. LSU's got DBU coming in. That's always kind of a sneaky good team. Georgia's got Duke and Oklahoma State coming over. That's one where I could see the home team not advancing.
Georgia.
I could see Duke is good this year, and Oklahoma State, they're if they get hot offensively, I think that they could be a tough team to deal with. I'll tell you the other one, Ole Miss. They get Georgia Tech coming in there. Georgia Tech is the ACC champion. They thought they should be hosting. And, you know, Ole Miss, they had to use a lot of arms at Hoover. We've seen how that can, you know, that can affect you the next week. Ole Miss has got Georgia Tech. Also, Western Kentucky in there. Western Kentucky, a really good team. They actually have the best home win percentage of any team in the country this year. UCLA gets UC Irvine and Arizona State. Again, there's another couple of old Pac-12 teams. Texas gets Texas San Antonio and K-State coming in. To Austin, K-State, of course, you know, they're still a team that they can create chaos because they can really force the action on the bases.
And I think this exercise, one thing it did for me is it just reinforced, like, I know people were saying, like, Arkansas got such, like, the toughest. I was seeing it everywhere, and I'm like, I just think there are arguments for a whole lot of other regionals, too. Like,
yeah,
it's just, I don't.
You can't look at the win totals.
Yeah.
Like, give me the RPIs of each team.
Yeah.
Let's calculate the average RPI at each regional. And I think if you do that, you might look at it like Arkansas is right there in the middle, maybe the bottom half in terms of the toughest regional for the host team.
Yeah. And I just think the way I look at this bracket, I'm just seeing SEC taking over the world.
You're just chanting that SEC. What if they had 13 of the 16 super regional teams? I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think Kentucky should have even gotten in the tournament.
I wrote on softball before the SEC tournament, I said it was going to be a preview of the Women's College World Series, and lo and behold, I think it's like 5 of the 8, and Super Regionals were 9 of the 16. It's just how it's going right now. It's like it's just dominating the conferences.
I think this has got a potential to be another year. You know, like last year in Omaha, it was 4 SEC teams and 4 ACC teams. These two conferences, like I said, are kind of pushing everybody along. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of SEC versus ACC or SEC versus SEC, ACC versus ACC. But basically, like, of the 16 super regional teams, maybe 3/4 of them are from those two conferences. That wouldn't be a surprise at all.
Yeah. I love this time of year because I like the chaos. And it's also interesting. I mean, buckle up. Knocking on wood, because the weather looks fine for this weekend right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's chaos on regional weekend, and then you add on to it the rain delays that happen across the country, and it just creates ultra chaos trying to keep up with even who's like playing at the moment.
That's why Dave Van Horn says he likes to take the early game.
Yeah,
is because it's you know, there's a lot of weird things that can happen, and the more you can control your schedule, the better off I think you are in a regional. So Arkansas is going to play the early game, 2 o'clock on Friday. It's going to be on ESPN+. Creighton and Kansas will play the second game on Friday night at 7. On Saturday and Sunday, the two game times on Saturday and Sunday are 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. both days. So the teams that lose Friday will play at 2 o'clock on Saturday, and the teams that win Friday will play at 8 o'clock Saturday night, so long as the weather holds up and the schedule can stay the same. When we come back, we're going to talk Razorback softball with Ethan, what happened at the Super Regional. Also, Arkansas basketball getting Carter Knox back. We'll discuss that as well. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I'll tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Carter Knox coming back to the Razorback basketball team. He announced last night that he is pulling his name out of the NBA draft process. Today's the 27th of May, so he had until tomorrow to do that. Adu Thero still, there's some thought that he might. I don't know that any of us expect him to do it quite so much as we expected Carter Knox. This is a big deal for the Razorback basketball team because I thought, I don't know, maybe last 10 to 15 games of the season, I thought Carter Knox really took a step forward and was playing some of his best basketball, and he was one of the players that I thought you wanted on the floor when the game was on the line for this team that certainly got better down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, the very last game that he played this season against Texas Tech, scored 20 points and made all 4 threes that he took. He averaged a little over 13 points in the NCAA tournament. This was a guy who played his best basketball on the bigger stages. I think that's what's exciting about him, is that it was in the most important home run stretch of the year. You know, whenever you think about Arkansas turning around its season and making that push toward the tournament, and then once they got in it, what they did, it all coincided with Carter Knox playing really well. And I think that that's what's exciting about him coming back, is that, you know, it seems like he's that type of guy you can really build around. Like, I'd be shocked if he's not some sort of preseason SEC team, just because of kind of the end of the year that he had, and then that he did gain that sort of like NBA draft talk. So they have a nice little core coming back.
That's what I was gonna say, is that who was it, maybe Mike Kaywood, who's the basketball SID over there, they before Carter Knox had come back, they said it was the most players that they had returning on a roster since I think the 18-19 season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you're talking about pre-NIL, pre-COVID, pretty much kind of like prehistoric in terms of modern college sports. This is kind of unheard of to have that kind of core coming back for a team. Not saying that, you know, Auburn, they had a good core that came back this year. I think Alabama had a pretty good core come back. There are teams that do it, but there just aren't a whole lot of teams that do it. And it seems like the teams that do return the players, those are the teams that you expect the most out of when the season rolls around.
I think that's why you see mid-major teams get really good and become Cinderellas, because it's usually on the fourth year of having a whole group of guys together that they're special. And I think that it just makes you wonder in a second year with this much talent on a team, how much that can just really mesh together. I think that this has the potential to be a really good team. I'd still, if I was coach, I would try and get a sharpshooter, just like one guy who can come down and that's his role, just 3-and-D kind of guy. But I look at him and I'm like, man, you have Wagner, Knox, Richmond, Brazil. Those are four guys right there that in the postseason were huge for you. And frankly, we're big all season whenever you have a rotation as short as they had. But I just think that there is something to be said about continuity, especially adding these two bigs that filled immediate needs with Ewan can score and offensive rebound. Pringle's a good defender and defensive rebound. I just think that they plugged holes that were needed and built around a core. Excited to see where it goes. And then, of course, you have the two freshmen coming in that are, like, enjoy seeing them while you do. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm like, I don't see any of those guys being not one and done. They're so freaking good.
What do you think happens with Thero?
Oh, he's not coming back.
You don't think he's coming back?
No. If he does, it would be crazy. I was told like last week, middle of the week, that Knox was like 65% coming back type of deal. And I asked about Thero and was basically like, yeah, no.
Okay.
But maybe something changes. But
well, because he had a comment within the last couple of weeks that basically said that he's leaning towards staying in, but he's not completely closing the door, right?
Yeah.
Am I misrepresenting that?
Yeah, it was something about, like, the way it was said, it did not, like, it wasn't, like, pushing toward this is going to happen. I think it was more like just, yeah, I'd try and keep all my options open type of deal. But then he posts on TikTok or something, like, a photo of his invite to the draft or whatever and says how many days away. Like, I think he said, like, 36 days.
Mm,
okay. So if a player posts that, that gives me the vibe of, like, hey, I got my eyes set on this day that's coming up. But
I'm glad you are keeping up with these guys on TikTok, because that is totally outside of my purview.
My TikTok yesterday, I got on there, and TikTok is all, like, what am I trying to say? It's where you don't know what's coming.
Right.
It's the...
Do you post on TikTok or do you TikTok?
Oh, I don't post.
No, I'm saying, I'm not saying you. I'm just talking about you generally speaking. Like, if it was, like, do you TikTok or do you tick or do you talk? I mean, like,
I think you just post. Okay. You just post on TikTok. But yeah, no, the formula or whatever it does that determines what comes across my feed. I got on there yesterday. It was all sad Arkansas softball videos. I was like, man, why do y'all, how does it know that, like, I'm covered this? I don't know. It was weird. And these were getting a lot of views. I had no, like,
can I tell you something that happened to me over the weekend? I was driving back. I'd been down at the SEC tournament. I was driving back, and I was in my wife's car, and there was a receipt that was down in the door. And I had to stop and get gas in Forest City in a monsoon. And so I open the door, and the wind comes in, whoosh, and it knocks this receipt out. And so I run down the receipt, and I look at it. And it was something that we had gotten at Academy, I don't know, maybe a week and a half ago. Within 5 minutes, I get a text message from Academy. Tell us how you enjoyed your order at Academy. And it's the stuff that we had bought 2 weeks previous. It's so weird. I hadn't thought about it. And so I think our phones are getting as sophisticated as they've ever been.
Goodness. All I know is
I don't find that to be...
it was scary.
Ironic.
You know, I mean, I'm telling you, yesterday I scrolled TikTok like 3 minutes, and I'm not kidding, 4 or 5 videos were sad Arkansas softball videos that somebody out in the world had put together, and these things weren't getting like just a few views. I'm like, holy crap, how did these things blow up this much? It just makes you, it was crazy. It was like videos of Bree Ellis crying on the ground. It was videos of Courtney Dyfel hugging her player. I was like, why? And it was all with sad music. I was like
Sarah McLaughlin?
Yeah, I'll show you one of these after this. After we get done with this, I will pull up my TikTok and I'll show you what I'm talking about. I was like, this is getting way too smart. These phones are that it knows that I cover this team.
I have never been on TikTok. Never.
Yeah, I don't ever. Think it'd be. I don't think you'd be in your element.
What makes you say that?
I just. I just don't think you'd find it very amusing.
I don't either.
So, but hey, TikTok is, I'm telling you, these days, if you want to find out like how people are feeling about things, athletes will post stuff on TikTok that they aren't posting anywhere else. They put it out there. I see it a lot more on TikTok than
I'm
I
glad,
see anywhere else.
I'm glad you're there so I don't have to be.
Yeah, I'm doing my, I'm doing us all a service.
Here's the nice thing about being the oldest person in the room here, and I'm not that old, but I'm not that young anymore either, is that the you guys are all over the social media stuff, and so I don't have to pay attention to it. I know that if something happens, you're going to text it to me within 5 seconds, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just have the right notifications on.
Yeah, and I've got some notifications on, but I do get notification fatigue to where I've got so many that, you know, I just kind of become oblivious to when my watch or my phone buzz.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we're doing a service as your social media interns or whatever.
All right, so we're not going to try to be as sad as the TikTok videos about Razorback softball, but they do lose the Super Regional to Ole Miss. And I tell you, the one thing that I come back to is I just wonder how much different this series would have gone had they not had a couple of pitchers who had some bad, I don't know, tacos, burrito, whatever the case might be.
Yeah. It was – and that's what I think if you watch the Dyfel postgame, that's what she's – it's killing her. Is she just said, like, what are the chances?
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying it through tears. I think that it's just like this was the team that I just had no doubt in my mind they were going to win this past weekend. I don't know. And I think that's how they all felt, too. It was just they had the better season, better stats across the board. They were playing so well. And then that happens. I think it just took something out of them right at the beginning. And it's hard to recover. I mean, I put this in a story. 80% of teams entering this postseason that won game one of a Super Regional advance all time. It's hard to bounce back after losing that first game. And they had a chance to do it. And I just think that not having those two pitchers right off the bat, it just kind of gave bad mojo to the whole weekend. And it's tough for
them. It expects you to be perfect the rest of the way.
And they had pitchers pitching in their first game of a Super Regional that had not pitched in weeks. Mm. And like the last time that Cam Harrison had pitched was at the end of a blowout to LSU in a game that it was like one of their worst games of the whole year. They still won that series. And it was just to get them through a bad game. It was like nobody had pitched in a – none of those pitchers had pitched in that important of a moment in months. Like, it was – I felt awful for Courtney because it's, like, their biggest game of the year to date, and it's, like, just trying to figure out a way last second because she got alerted Friday morning. Apparently, the pitchers woke up, like, middle of the night, sick, throwing up. And so you have no time to really prepare. They had moved the game time up to 11 a.m., too. It's not
from 7.
Yeah, it was supposed to be 7, so it was like not like you have the whole day to figure out either. Mm-hmm. It's literally making calls to your secondary pitchers in the morning of like, hey, we need you today.
Well, and the weather ended up being okay that they could have played at 7 o'clock, right? I was out of town, but based on what other people told me, they probably could have played that 7 o'clock. And you wonder if they would have kept it at 7. Can they get some IVs into these pitchers? You know, like what kind of difference would those extra 8 hours have made with that game? It's always going to be a what if, should have, would have, could have, whatever. But that was my first thought, was how much different could this have been if they would have had the team? And that's the deal. This team that lost to Ole Miss, yes, they had a lot of the same bodies there, but when you don't have Robin Heron pitching like Robin Heron had pitched all year, and, you know, Burnham, I guess, was the other one who had, you know, and she ended up pitching okay in game two. But when you don't have them available for that first game, it's almost like you're just – I hate to say you're forfeiting it because they gave, you know, a pretty good effort that first day, and they gave Ole Miss a battle. But, you know, it's almost like you're saying, okay, here's this game, and now we have to be perfect this day and this day in order to move on.
Yeah, and that was the main thing. They almost won game one still, too. Like, Kaylee Wyckoff, the game-ending flyout, it sounded like a home run off or a walk-off. Mm. And it just died. I mean, there wasn't a lot of wind, and it just died in the outfield. I think if there had been any wind, that thing carries. But it's one of those – it'll be the biggest what-if for Courtney that she's had since she's been the coach here. It's just, you felt it this week. And she even said after they lost on Sunday, I think what made it sting so bad for her is even after they lost game one, she said that she just had like a sense of calmness about her, that she just thought her team like was still going to find a way. I think that's the thing about their team this year. It just felt always like they were going to find a way. It was shocking when they lost, to be honest. Think about this. Before Sunday, when they lost that series, they had not lost more. They hadn't lost a series, or like if you count SEC tournament, lost more games in a weekend than they won since before men's basketball NCAA tournament started. Like they had gone that long.
Against OU.
Yeah, against OU. It was like that same week the SEC basketball tournament happened. They had won every series from then on. And it just, that's what I think was just so, it just was a feeling that they hadn't felt in over 2 months. And it just, this was the team that like, I just thought they were going to do it. I thought they were going to be honest, I thought they were going to win this and then make a run in Oklahoma City, because if you look at how the bracket shaped up, it's going to be a lot of what ifs from now on. You can't dwell on it too long if you're Arkansas, because you do have a lot of the players coming back next year. And, yeah, of course you lose some really good players. I mean, you lost, at least by one publication, National Player of the Year. You lost Courtney Day, who was huge as a transfer this year. You're losing Reagan Kramer, who's just kind of a staple in the program. And then you're losing Carly Ratcliffe, who was good. She didn't play a lot, but good team person. But other than that, I mean, you're returning pretty much everybody. And a lot of them have already indicated with stuff that they've posted, like, so glad I'll be here another year. Like, one thing with their team, you don't worry too much about a lot of people transferring out, at least that are very, that would have really hurt your team if they did, so.
But like the, well, you're saying the players who are, who you expect something from, they typically will stick around.
Yeah, it's, and I don't know if that, I feel like that's softball in general. Most schools have that, unless there's, I mean, there's some programs that are known for not a great culture of the program and you see girls transferring out regularly, but like the ones that do have coaches that have a good reputation, like Arkansas, you usually see like, it's not weird to see 3 or 4 year players at a school.
It, you know, I feel bad for Courtney Dyfel. I had a soundbite that we're going to play. I'm not going to play it because she's, you know, she's kind of sniffling through it. She's real emotional. I feel bad for them because they are so close to kicking down that door, and they have been for about 5 years now. I know they've had a couple of regionals where they didn't get out of the regional, but they've been so close for so many years now. They're going to do it at some point. I don't have any doubt about that. You look through, you know, other sports. Maybe there's examples of this in softball too. I'm just not as well versed in softball as I am in, you know, other sports. The number of times that a coach comes so close, and they just can't, you know, and eventually when they finally win it, because you know it's going to come if you know for usually. I mean, like Mike Martin, he never won a national championship in baseball. Van Horn, I think he's got the second most wins of a coach who's never won a national championship in baseball, but. Yeah, I think about Scott Drew at Baylor. I mean, think about how many agonizing defeats Baylor had to go through before he got his national championship. How about a Matt Painter at Purdue? They haven't won one. Think about like just some of the things that they've had. Mark Few at Gonzaga. Some of the gut punch losses that Gonzaga's had in the NCAA tournament. Even like a, I mean, you know, and this is a totally different class, but you know, Krzyzewski. You go back to the 80s and early 90s, they lost a national championship game to Louisville in 86. They lost a national championship game to UNLV in 90. I mean, there were a lot of really close calls for them before they were able to finally break through and win it. These are just kind of the birth pangs of a program, so to speak.
Yeah, I am always shocked, too. Like, I shouldn't even check social media after some of these games just because of some of the crazy stuff you see, but the comments that people – like we're making about Dyfel after Sunday's game were just ruthless about, I'm like, it's like people talk about things as if it's supposed to be easy to go to the World Series.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, how tough is it to make it there? It's like, I think people got numb with how many times baseball made it. People got numb to how hard I think it actually was every single time.
Well, and they're still very critical of baseball when they don't, you know, they don't go far enough or whatever. I mean, they've been the national semifinalists in 22. And they lose a competitive game to the national champion, and people are pissed off about that. But there's too many people out there who don't value the regular season and what that means to a program. And it's like, and so, and I feel like you got people in two different classes. You got people who enjoy the everyday minutiae of how, you know, this goes in softball, basketball, whatever. And then you have the people who turn on March Madness.
Yeah.
And you have the people who turn on the College World Series or the regional round or whatever. And they just don't, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you're done the first weekend. I'm not impressed with you. And I think it really is a turnoff to the people who do appreciate all of the ups and downs and the peaks and valleys of a regular season. And I think it's a disservice to all the work and the effort that goes into building these teams and getting them ready for the postseason whenever you have people who are like that. But they're a minority. They're a very loud minority
yes.
of people because, you know, I mean, I've got them on Twitter. Yeah, you know, I posted yesterday, hey, Arkansas's never – well, you know, they're not even going to play Tennessee.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe they don't, but you don't know that.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's like I think people that watched this team all year long, like that's why it was honestly shocking to them that they lost on Sunday is because you just had seen them with the ups and downs of the season find a way. Like it was like they always found a way, and then they just didn't. Probably like how – obviously they weren't the one national seed or anything. Like baseball was that 2021. 2021. I mean, it was like it was shocking when they lost because you just hadn't felt that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like where I'd gotten with this.
We also
team.
Had Superman on the mound.
Yeah, exactly. And it just was. I think that it does do a disservice to people that just chime in. It's like I think for softball, especially a sport that wants more, like they asking for more people to watch it. It's great that they got more people eyeballs on it in the postseason, but it's like just don't make comments about a team that you didn't watch for. So much of the year as if, like, it's matter of fact that, like, I don't know, just if you didn't watch the whole season, don't be making bold statements about all these things that you saw in one weekend, if that makes sense.
If your viewpoint of a successful season is winning a national championship,
you're going to be so disappointed.
You are going to be disappointed over 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Like 99.89%. 9-5, you know, I mean, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I feel like you have to appreciate the things that come along with it. The conference championships, the division championships, the top 8 seeds, the home field advantage, the World Series, if you can get there. And, you know, I mean, and be ready for the fact that you're probably not going to win it all. Yeah. And I don't know. I think that's where I differ from a lot of people who watch sports. I think it's where I differ from a lot of people who watch sports and pay attention to sports is that I find value in the day-to-day, game-to-game of a season. Doesn't matter if it's a high school football season or a college basketball season or college baseball or whatever. Major League Baseball. I mean, there's 162 games, and the teams that win the World Series lose like 60 or 70. And, you know, you just have to kind of ride that wave, you know, and enjoy the ups when you get them and be prepared that you're probably going to be let down if your ultimate expectation is to win the title at the end of every year.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people I don't think do is just actually take a whole season for what it was. They look at the very end, and because you didn't win it all, in the softball team's case, I think it was get to OKC.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily like with baseball. They're like, if you don't win a championship, and I'm like, they haven't done it before, so why I don't know. It's like people make an expectation as if something should be easy that is very much not easy to do. And I just hate it for like the players and coaches are clearly hurting on Sunday, like bad.
Well, you know,
and
what
they're
else
just
it
getting
does?
Salt thrown on the wounds.
You know what else it does? It takes away the accomplishment of the team that you played. Sometimes you just get outplayed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you just get outplayed.
Yeah.
Ole Miss, they outplayed Arkansas 2 times this year.
Yep.
And I'm talking about 2 different weekends. I think that you just look at it and you say, they are a better team this year.
Mm-hmm.
If Arkansas gets matched up with a different SEC team in a super regional, maybe they're in Oklahoma City right now. It's just the draw, and you know that's how it is.
I also hate it for Bree Ellis because she did not have a good postseason. I mean, she'll be the first to admit it. And it was like it came with the time that everybody, yeah. like, well, all the eyeballs are watching, which I think that's something she'll be hurting over for the rest of her life, I think. Just
that
like,
happens a lot, though.
Yeah.
You have this, and a lot of it is that teams are going to go into the postseason, they're going to say, we're not going to let that person beat us.
I mean, it was crazy. I don't even want to know what her batting average was. It was very low, but her on-base percentage was still, like, over 500 because she walked so much, but she just didn't get, like, the home runs and stuff. And I just, like, it was like all the eyeballs were finally on this team, and that's what happens when you don't take a season for the whole. You only see, like, at the end how a team is pitching to somebody, and somebody not doing, I don't know. It's like people, I think a lot of people tuned in just to watch her hit home runs or something. Mm-hmm. And then she's not. She's just taking walks or, you know, flying out deep to left field. And it's just like, that's what the people who watched a whole season still take, like the season as a whole and what she did. And then there were people just calling her like, there, I mean, some of these comments I saw on social media were terrible. Like, and it was just like, you did not watch this team.
Here's my final takeaway today is that when it comes to softball or baseball, there are so many uncontrollable variables that make, I think, those two sports probably, you know, and I'm not going to say more than any other sport, but certainly in those two sports, it makes it so hard to win whenever there's such a small window that you've got to win in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so much different to talk about a super regional and a best of three series as opposed to talking about a 30 game season. And, you know, it's people hate it whenever you say that's baseball, but there's a reason people have been saying that for 100 years.
I will say all of this makes me like watching like them get so close all the time to do this. It makes me respect the heck out of Patty Gasso so much. I'm like, holy cow, how do you keep doing this? I'm like, that is impressive.
Yeah.
But and they're right back at it again where nobody wants to play them because they're so good. I'm like, it is impressive.
Mostly a home game for them too.
Yeah, exactly. And for coaches that can do that, I'm just stunned, the ones that can keep it rolling like that.
But Battagasso, I'm sure she had her bumps in the road before she got to that point where she got OU rolling. And
this
even
has been a down year for them.
Down year, 49-5.
They lost series in the regular season to Tennessee and Alabama, yeah. And that ruined it.
Yeah, well,
like holy cow, people were saying like, I was when they were losing to Arkansas in the SEC tournament. I checked Twitter and OU fans. I mean, I think this is just the irrationality of a lot of fan bases. We're like, how Patty's got to figure out hitting, like, or they're pitching. How this always comes back to get them. How I'm like, how? They've won 4 national titles in a row. How is this always coming back to get them? It's just like people forget how hard it is to be good, and then whenever you are good, don't respect that you were good.
It's the Alabama football syndrome.
Exactly. I mean, this softball team this year was probably the best they've ever had, and that's right up there with the 2022 team that won the SEC championship. That was an SEC without Texas.
You're going back to Arkansas right now. You're talking about Arkansas's best.
Arkansas softball. This was their best season in my eyes that I've watched. Like, just they were so complete, and they just had a bad weekend. And they had a bad weekend coupled with like terrible circumstances.
You know this is going to work when they finally get through to Oklahoma City. It's going to be the team you never see coming. It's going to be the team that goes on the road and they're a 2 seed, and then they go to a super regional and they've gotten tight on the road, and that's just how it works.
Yeah,
you know, I was looking at Van Horn yesterday. He's had 9 teams now that have been top 8 national seeds. 4 of the previous 8, because this is the 9th, so 4 of the previous 8 made it to the World Series. That means that more than half, because he's been 9 times, more than half of the teams that he had get to the World Series had to go through the postseason without home field advantage.
Yeah.
That's just how it works in the sport. It is, and in softball, it is so unpredictable, the postseason.
Yeah. And Ole Miss had played in a winner-take-all game at Arizona the weekend before. So they'd had their backs against the wall on the road. And it was just, I think it was, you could feel some pressure. The first inning, whenever Ole Miss like created some just havoc on the bases and scored some runs and they took an early lead, you could feel the pressure in the stadium. So it's the nature of the sport. You have one bad weekend, your season can be over.
Yeah, that's a tough deal. Very tough deal. That's why I like Major League Baseball or in the NBA. You get a best of 7 series. Yeah. I think it gives you a little bit better sample, and you can overcome food poisoning a little bit better in that way. But that's not how college works. And Arkansas softball season comes to an end. Good season for them. Just falls short of Oklahoma City again. I truly believe they're going to break through and eventually go there, not just once, but multiple times under Courtney Dyfel. They're just too close to kicking down that door.
And next year could be the year their pitching staff is going to be so good. It's going to be crazy.
And they're going to stay away from certain eating establishments.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate you being with us. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We'll talk more baseball. Also, we'll have Anthony Christensen to talk talk to him about Carter Knox at some point this week. Christina Long is in Destin right now at the SEC spring meetings. We'll also have her on our podcast this week. Talk about everything that's being kicked around there. From what we read, very consequential week at the SEC spring meetings with a lot of decisions that are going to be made from SEC ADs, presidents, and chancellors. So looking forward to having her there. You can read her work at wholehogsports.com throughout the week. Hope you'll come there to read our baseball coverage as well. Hope we see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everybody.